Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Lori London reporting. President Trump acknowledged Thursday that he asked the head of the nation's law enforcement agency, James Comey, whether he was being investigated. But White House Press Secretary or Deputy Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders in the daily briefing to reporters Thursday pushed back on claims that the motive for firing Comey was related to an ongoing probe into the 2016 presidential campaign and possible collusion with the Russian government.
The president over the last several months lost confidence in Director Comey. After watching Director Comey's testimony last Wednesday, the president was strongly inclined to remove him.
In an interview with NBC's Lester Holt Thursday, Trump called Comey a showboat and a grandstander, which angered Democratic Senator Mark Warner.
I thought he was a straight shooter. And frankly, I'm offended at the president's comments today. This is a continuing pattern of disrespecting the men and women who serve in our intelligence community.
FBI Director James Comey was fired by Trump Tuesday, creating a political firestorm and raising concerns in some circles about a constitutional crisis. A U.S. national security official told Congress Thursday that the U.S. informed French officials that Russia had hacked France's computer networks during the country's presidential election before the cyber attacks became public. France's Election Campaign Commission said Saturday a significant amount of data, some of it likely fake, was leaked on social networks after a cyber attack on the presidential campaign of centrist candidate Emmanuel Macron. Fewer Americans sought jobless benefits last week, and the number of people collecting unemployment in America fell to the lowest level since 1988. This is VOA. While Republicans rewrite the Affordable Care Act in Washington, the future of the current law has grown hazier, with the nation's third largest health insurer completely divorcing itself from state-based insurance markets. Aetna said late Wednesday that it won't sell individual coverage next year in its two remaining states, Nebraska and Delaware, after projecting a $200 million loss this year. It had already dropped Iowa and Virginia for 2018. The insurer once sold the coverage in 15 states, but slashed that to four after losing about $450 million in 2016. As the seven other Arctic Council member nations called on the U.S. to remain a steady partner in efforts to mitigate the effects of climate change, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson told his counterparts at a meeting in Fairbanks, Alaska, that the Trump administration has not yet made a decision on its policies on the issue.
In the United States, we are currently reviewing several important policies, including how the Trump administration will approach the issue of climate change.
Issues of great concern, he noted, are advancing the welfare and living conditions of Arctic communities, recognizing each country's strategic interests in the Arctic, and ensuring vigilance in protecting the fragile environment. Grammy winner Kelly Clarkson is joining the hit singing competition The Voice as a coach, but not for another year. NBC announced Thursday that the stronger singer will join Adam Levine and Blake Shelton as coaches for the show's 14th season. Oscar winner Jennifer Hudson has been announced as a coach on the show's 13th season, which begins airing in the fall of 2017. Clarkson has been a voice advisor in previous years. She has no stranger to musical competition shows, by the way. She won the first season of Fox's American Idol. Hudson, another Idol alumna, finished in that series top 10 in 2004. She later won an Oscar for Dreamgirls. The future of legalized recreational marijuana use in the U.S. state of Vermont hinged Thursday on a decision by its Republican Governor Phil Scott. That's a day after the state legislature became the first in the country to vote to legalize it. Scott hasn't said whether he'll sign the bill to make Vermont the ninth state to legalize recreational marijuana, but he has said he wants to ensure the proposal addresses public safety needs, such as ways to counter drugged driving. If it becomes law, Virginia would become the first state to have legalized marijuana via the legislative process. The eight other states have legalized marijuana via citizen referendums. I'm Lori London in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, May 12th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Somalia's government expresses satisfaction with the outcome of Thursday's London International Conference.
This is a great success for Somalia, great success for UK, and great success for the entire world. The reason being, Somalia has submitted its vision and plans on how to deal with the security issues.
Abdirahman Omar Osma is Somalia's Minister of Information. A UN official is concerned about recent fighting in South Sudan. A Liberian civil society group calls for respect for the rule of law as the debate on code of conduct for prospective candidates heats up. Kenya's Electoral Commission launches the information verification phase of its voter list compilation process.
It's a very, very important exercise. It's part of our efforts to ensure that we have a clean register, an accurate register, and a comprehensive register for the 8th August election.
Rosalind Kwamboka Akumbo is a commissioner at Kenya's Independent Electoral Commission, and Sierra Leone's government says the price was not right at Thursday's auction of a 709-carat diamond. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Somalia's government has expressed satisfaction with the outcome of Thursday's London International Conference on Somalia. Participants at the international conference said they will support a plan aimed at enabling Somalia's fledgling and poorly equipped army to defeat al-Shabaab militants and take over national security from African Union troops. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, speaking at the conference, said all the conditions are now met for Somalia to be a success story after more than 20 years of conflict. Somalia's Information Minister Abdirahman Omar Osman thanked Britain for hosting the conference and hopes the promises made would come to fruition.
This is a great success for Somalia, great success for UK, and great success for the entire world. The reason being, Somalia has submitted its vision and plans on how to deal with the security issues, and how to manage its public finance, and how to really do a real partnership with the international world. And the call has been listened very carefully, and we are very grateful for the leadership of the UK and the world, and that listened and also agreed Somalia needs a Somali-owned and Somali-led vision and process. So we are very grateful of the outcome of today's London Somali conference.
Your president, speaking at the conference, was also sounding the same way, but he also hoped that those making the commitments will follow through on the commitments. Is that the concern of your government?
Absolutely, because our citizens have been telling us that there have been previous international conferences and they didn't connect the outcome and the reality on the ground on what has been changed. So this time, Somalia is well prepared and ready, and that's why the commitment from Somali side is real and genuine. And that's why Somalia needs to do a follow-up process to ensure that the international commitments are followed through as well. So, and we are very grateful that UK has shown leadership and commitment that they're willing to work with us during these difficult times in order to overcome the vast and huge challenge that we face.
On the issue of security, the U.S. Defense Secretary James Mattis, who also attended the conference, said the United States will continue helping your country. Can you describe the security arrangement that is going on between your country now and the United States military?
Yes, as you are aware, there was a security pact that was agreed at the London Somali Conference. It sets out an agreed vision of Somali-led security institutions and forces that are affordable, acceptable, accountable, and that can provide the security and the protection that our people deserve and need. So this is something that we have been working in partnership with our allies and friends, the likes of UK and the US. And now we are very grateful that the pact that we have submitted has been agreed upon. And now is the time that we will be looking for the implementation. And also in order to ensure that, as you know, there is a new partnership for Somalia that has been agreed, which also sets out how Somalia and the international community will work together to meet our political issues, the security, economic needs, and the aspiration of our people. So we cannot thank enough for our international partners, and in particular for UK.
Of course, Mr. Minister, this conference was not just about security, but also about how to end the famine in your country, particularly caused by the lack of rain. The UN Secretary General made reference to that, saying that the United Nations will need more money to deal with this situation.
Yes, even though the country is making huge progress in terms of security and political, nevertheless, we face a looming crisis in the humanitarian side where we are expecting, if not dealt appropriately and on time, and it will become a looming famine, and which is what has happened in 2011. So even though the federal government of Somalia has done a lot in terms of raising over $5 million within Somalia, and also the international community made the commitment, but the money that has been pledged so far is not enough compared to the magnitude of the looming famine. And that's why the UN Secretary General was really taking advantage of the international community coming together and asking their support in this area.
Thank you, Minister. So nice to talk with you.
Thank you very much.
Abdi Rahman Omar Osman is Somalia's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Mogadishu. Kenya's Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission on Thursday launched the information verification phase of the voter list compilation process. This will allow prospective voters to cross-check their biometric information captured during the first phase of the voter registration period. The commission is compiling a voter list to be used for the August 8th general election, but local media reports suggest there was a low turnout at various polling stations as the commission commenced the verification of the voter register. Commissioner Rosalind Kwamboka Akombi tells viewers Peter Clotty the electoral body is pleased with the turnout and the biometric machines being used for the first time in Kenya.
We launched a very, very important activity in our electoral process today, that is the biometric verification of voters. This requires voters to go to any polling station within their ward to ensure that their biometric data is correct, that their names are recorded in the right manner that they had given us during registration, and that, more importantly, actually, that the polling stations that are indicated in our register are the polling stations that the voters intend to vote come the 8th of August. It's a very, very important exercise. It's part of our efforts to ensure that we have a clean register, an accurate register, and a comprehensive register for the 8th August election.
Overall, are you satisfied with how prospective Kenyan voters have gone to the polls to verify their information?
So far for today, we are satisfied with the numbers that are coming out. We know that in Kenya, as always, people wait for the last minute, and we are urging Kenyans to come out, not to wait until the last day. As you know, as you might be aware, this is a 30-day exercise. We have 30 days as required by law. But more important, we are pleased that the technology that we have deployed for the first time for these elections has worked, and we have not had any hitches in the deployment and the use of this technology.
Talk to me about those diasporan voters, those in South Africa and a few places that the IEBC has chosen, so Kenyan citizens residing in those countries can also participate in this voter verification of information stage.
Yes, we will be starting the registration, the verification of diaspora voters from the 15th of this month, 15 May, and we'll finish it on the 30th May. And this is in the five countries that we have registered voters, namely South Africa, Tanzania, Uganda, Rwanda, and Burundi. So we have the same technology, same methodology that will be used to verify the particulars of voters in those areas or those five countries that have I have outlined.
How soon, once you get all the information within the 30-day period, how soon will Kenyans know when the register will be completely compiled and be given to them to check again before the elections?
Well, we have actually three ways of after we have compiled, after we have checked the register, after we have made the changes to any particulars, we will have SMS, text message availability, whereby Kenyans can send a text message and get feedback on whether the information as corrected is still the same. And then we also have availability of the web portal, where you can log into our website, put in your identity number, identification, national identification number, or passport number if you had used the passport to register, and the information will show up. That is, those are the two processes. But we will also avail the register as of 17th June, as required by the law, and that is the register that will be used for purposes of the election.
Rosalind Kwamboka Akombe is a commissioner at Kenya's Electoral Commission. She spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Nairobi. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Friday, May 12th. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. A Liberian civil society group has called for respect for the rule of law as the debate on a code of conduct for prospective candidates in this year's election heats up. The code of conduct requires all presidential appointees with aspirations to seek an elected position to resign their post at least 2 years before declaring their intentions. The Supreme Court ruled in March this year that the code of conduct was constitutional. Debate is also heating up around the constitutionally mandated 10-year residency requirement. Dr. Amos Sawyer, chair of the Governor's Commission, has recommended that the 10-year residency clause be suspended for the October election. But Oscar Blow, chair of the Elections Coordinating Committee, says Liberians must respect the rule of law.
The ECC, meaning the Elections Coordinating Committee, we hold the view that the code of conduct may not be favorable, may not be responsive to our current political situation, but the code of conduct, Part 5, Section 5.1, 5.2 was challenged, and the Supreme Court gave an opinion. And in as much as we have concerns about these provisions, we respect the Supreme Court's opinion.
There are some people like the Governor's Commission led by Dr. Amos Sawyer who have a different view on that. What do you say to them?
I'm saying to all Liberians that we, at this time of our democratic development, we've had 12 years of civil governance, and it's about time that we respect the rule of law. That is important. That the Supreme Court's opinion be respected. That if we have issues, the Supreme Court is to interpret the law. And this, the Supreme Court has now interpreted the law, and the Supreme Court said that this law does not in any way contravene the Constitution. So those who have issues, let's try to find a way to amend this law to the legal procedure.
So you do not accept, therefore, the recommendation by Dr. Sawyer of the Governor's Commission that the application of the Code of Conduct be suspended for these 2017 elections?
We oppose that recommendation in the very strongest term. This undermines our democracy. This undermines the rule of law. We should be trying to lobby with our lawmaker and say this law may be considered constitutional, but let's go back on the drawing board and try to amend these provisions. So we in no way accept or endorse the recommendation coming from the Governor's Commission.
Let's talk about the 10-year residency clause in the Constitution of Liberia. That is also coming into play for this, the 2017 elections. What's your committee's position?
We are very much concerned, and this is very troubling, and we don't accept. We oppose that suggestion coming from the Governor's Commission that Article 52C that has to do with the 10-year residence should be considered inapplicable. We consider this very disturbing. We must learn to uphold the rule of law. If there are candidates who don't meet this requirement, let them wait, because we have followed legal opinions. written down by the Supreme Court that has interpreted Article 52C, and we're calling on the GC to retract that suggestion that we should relax or consider Article 52C inapplicable. This is undermining our rule of law. In a very fair democracy, we must uphold the rule of law. And if there are issues that we have with laws, let us find the appropriate and most legal means to remedy laws that we feel don't suit our current reality.
Thank you very much, Mr. Blow. It's so nice to talk with you.
James Body, it's my pleasure. I'm standing by anytime because we're monitoring this process very carefully, and this is a very crucial period in our political history.
Oscar Blow is chair of Liberia's Elections Coordinating Committee, a civil society grouping. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The Sierra Leone government says the price was not right at Thursday's auction of a 709-carat diamond discovered in March this year by a Christian pastor. The top bid was $7.8 million, made on behalf of a Belgian diamond dealer. Presidential spokesman Abdoulaye Birete says the government hopes to get more for the diamond at an international auction.
We had five bidders. The highest was $7,777,000 plus change, but it didn't meet the government reserve price. So the Director General of the NMA, Mr. Sawundi, came out publicly to say, regrettably, government is organizing another set of bidding process, and that even if it means that we'll have to take this diamond to either Tel Aviv or Antwerp or any of those diamond capitals of the world so that we can get the expected price, then definitely we'll do that.
Nearly $8 million for the first bidding. Some would say, no, that's not too bad. So exactly how much money is your government looking for?
Well, that is a thing we didn't disclose at all, because one of the aspects of being very transparent in the sale of this diamond has been even the bidding documents, we refused to collect them from the bidders themselves until on Thursday when they were all seated at the bank complex and we asked them to submit them individually. And we opened them in the front view of the media, the civil society, and other stakeholders that are very much concerned when it comes to transparency in our country. And that is why we are not going to disclose the government reserve price, because we don't want any connivance that will undermine the very expected price for the diamond itself. So that process in itself has been lauded. That is why when it was announced that we are going to do a repeat of the bidding process, there were thunderous applauses in the hall from the media practitioners as well as civil society, which means it is like endorsing the government's position. And even the pastor who found the diamond came up to the high table and congratulated the government that indeed, in as much as he wanted some money, but yet still, he believes that the diamond is worth more than that amount, and he is with the government to make sure we continue the bidding process so that we can get a better price.
Talking about the pastor who found the diamond, people are asking this question: what are you going to do with the money, particularly for the people of the region where the diamond was found, and particularly this pastor?
One of the reasons given for handing over the diamond to government in the first place by the pastor was that for over 30 years, that part of the country has been neglected. Not until recently, when President Nkrumah restored electricity after 30 years and also constructed the roads and rehabilitated them leading into the township and also the roads in the township. So this, of course, the pastor said, convinced him to hand over the diamond. That is why for us as the government, we believe that in as much as Sierra Leone is one constituency for us when it comes to the development of the state, whatever we accrue, as we did when we accrued $30 million from capital gains tax when Orange bought Airtel, we came public to say we are paying this money into the Consolidated Revenue Fund, just as we are going to do when this diamond will have been sold. That way, we can continue the blueprint of our development agenda, which is the agenda for prosperity. Because the pastor has also indicated that he has development plans just as the government.
Abdoulaye Birete, spokesman for Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. It's 25 minutes past the hour, and it's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin with the news of some notable Africans who have been elected into top committees of football ruling body FIFA during the 67th Congress of the body. Notable of all the positions announced is Ghanaian Supreme Court Justice Anen Yeboah, who is now the chairman of FIFA's disciplinary committee. He was voted in for a four-year term. Rwanda's Martin Ngunga was voted in as the deputy chairman of the investigatory chamber of the ethics committee. Others include Nigeria's Justice Ayotunde Phillips, who was elected as member of the ethics committee adjudicatory chamber. Newly appointed Bafana Bafana coach Stuart Baxter will be outlining his future plans for South African football on Monday next week. The Scotsman says his main priority when he officially takes over the coaching reins next month will be to maintain good relations with all coaches throughout South Africa.
It's all based on relationships, and relationships must improve.
Stuart Baxter is also glad that Safa and his club, Super Sports, were able to reach some form of agreement on his future role.
The worst part for us was when there was a lot of uncertainty, and the uncertainty became slightly destabilizing.
Pesquera midfielder and former Ghanaian international Suleiman Muntari, who was racially abused in a league game last week, has already made it clear that he will leave the field again and again if he continues to receive racial abuses on the field of play, and he will not keep quiet about racial abuses.
Racial abuse is really bad. It's there. So I experienced it. Of course, I'm not going to keep quiet. I wanted to talk about it and to be able to fight it. There's a lot of people that are going through this kind of issue. So, and I decided not to sleep on it as previous occasions.
Suleiman Muntari, who called racial abuse a disease, said other professional football players in the world must come together to fight it.
We need to come together. We need to a strong team that can fight this disease here that I called it. It is a disease because we need to come together and fight it.
Cameroon football head coach Richard Towa was taken to a Baku hospital after fainting on Thursday during a match against Morocco, according to team doctor Tamo Maktamo. And to South Africa, where South African sports minister Stolas Nkwesi has confirmed that the South African Rugby Union has been given the green light to bid for the 2023 World Cup.
But also they've met a particular target, although it's low, which has been the basis of the memorandum. But starting from now, we are saying, let's start that program which goes into the black townships, into the rural areas.
The decision by the government of South Africa comes months after the body was among a number of sports organizations banned from hosting events for non-meeting transformation targets. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Somalia's government has expressed satisfaction with the outcome of Thursday's London International Conference on Somalia. Participants at the conference said they will support a plan aimed at enabling Somalia's fledgling and poorly equipped army to defeat al-Shabaab militants and take over the national security from African Union troops. And that's it for this Friday, May 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Bott in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of the Voice of America's African Beat. Splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical jam. I guarantee it.
African Beats.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Please join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their views and ideas to enlighten us all on the topic at hand. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America.